from Directions Magazine, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, February 21st, 2012. Each week, this podcast looks at news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
And this is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
Where is the innovation in geospatial? This week, we go looking for some innovation among recent product announcements. Do we find any? We'll let you know after a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Intergraph, bringing you truly integrated GIS and image processing from a single organization. You can easily leverage GeoMedia and Erdos Imagine in unison to construct a larger, more complete geospatial picture. GeoMedia delivers powerful GIS analysis and management, enabling you to integrate your geospatial resources. Erdos Imagine incorporates industry-leading geospatial image processing analysis and remote sensing capabilities. To learn more, visit intergraph.com/geospatial and register for our upcoming webinar.
So what I've collected is a sort of hodgepodge of new product announcements and emails that we've been sent as members of the press of some not necessarily brand shiny new, but very new geospatially related products and services. And what we're going to do is take a quick look at each one and try to evaluate if there is, in fact, any innovation going on there and whether or not we think these products are going to make it. So let's start off with one called Securaphone. And I got an email from them just a couple of days ago. And it's a free application that you put on your mobile phone. And it offers a whole series of tools. And I'll just read down their list of what they say it offers. Free GPS tracking and monitoring, helps saves lives, prevents distracted driving by preventing texting and emailing while driving, provides speed alerts, can connect people with emergency services, and shows location history for 90 days. So, Joe, is this an innovative new product?
Wow, it sounds like more like the kitchen sink than innovation. It does everything except... dries your hands and feet. I don't know. It doesn't sound innovative to me.
No, and in fact, I didn't use kitchen sink when I was describing it. I would use Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah.
Let's just collect all the possible safety-ish related things you might want on your phone, and we'll put them in one package. I don't consider that particularly innovative because all of those things exist already out there in different combinations. This is yet another combination.
Yeah, that's all it sounds like.
Yeah, so nothing special there. This one's a little bit more interesting and a little bit more unique. The Community Food Production Mapping Tool, the first of its kind in the nation, will allow residents, this is in Salt Lake City, to access a city map, click on their property, and find out how much food they could grow. The purpose of the mapping tool is to provide residents with an estimation of how much they could supplement the produce they buy with food grown in their own gardens. The tool was developed by Salt Lake City GIS coordinator Kevin Bell and University of Utah Department of City and Metropolitan Planning students. I gotta say, cool, just cool. But is it innovative?
When I read this, it made me think back to the applications that we learned when people wanted to find out how much fertilizer to put on their lawn.
Right.
That it would automatically take the square footage and say, hey, you should use X amount of lime or, Miracle-Gro or whatever you wanted to put there. And I thought, this is exactly the same thing, except they're just telling you, that you've got X amount of square feet to put in tomato plants? I don't know. Cool, but not innovative, I guess.
I think the innovation isn't, I'm sure the application is fine, and I'm curious as to whether it just sort of measures how much area of your lawn isn't covered by your house and outbuildings, or if it really looks at how much sunshine is in different parts of the yard or something like that. I suspect it's simpler rather than more in-depth, and I think that's fine. The innovation here is to have this tool to get people thinking about, hey, I could grow some food in my yard.
I think that's a good use. I would say that if it was as sophisticated as we might expect it to be or hope it to be, amount of solar radiance, does your lawn look vigorous enough so that they could make an extrapolation to say that your soil is good enough? That would be great. If maybe provide a few units of measure to say, hey, you know, you're, you know, you got a good chance at making some very healthy vegetables.
Yeah, I think this is more of an awareness that you could rather right. than saying you're going to be able to grow this many tomatoes and you're going to save this much money or your health will be this much better. I think this is more of an awareness kind of tool, but clever use of it. And it should be up and running by the time folks are listening to the podcast. So they should really have a look. Next one is one of these lighting navigation ideas, indoor lighting used as a navigation tool. The company's called Bytelight. It's based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Aims to use LED bulbs, which will fit into standard bulb sockets, as indoor positioning tools for apps that help people navigate places such as museums, hospitals, and stores, and offer deals targeted to a person's location. Now, that one sounded the most familiar to me. Had you heard about things like that before?
Yes and no. I was trying to put it, you know, in perspective of what we've learned about what people are trying to do with indoor navigation, but the bulb idea was different to me.
And actually, to me, it was not, because there was an effort. I went to try to find my own writing about this, and I could not find it. But I do distinctly remember an effort using fluorescent bulbs. And the idea was to have those bulbs put out signals. And the idea was for blind people to navigate indoors.
Hmm.
And the idea was that they would it'd be the same. They fit into the traditional fixtures, and all you'd really need to do is put these bulbs in and then have some software. So I thought, I mean, that really was exciting to me. But the idea that, at least the article that I read about Bytelight was so much about showing you deals within the store, which I think is the least of the interesting things you can do with this. More yeah. interesting is navigating you to the waiting room that you're supposed to go to in the hospital. Or, as you pointed out many times, get me right to the product I want to buy so I can buy it.
Yeah, the problem I see with this is there's an assumption that you're going to replace the light bulbs in the building with these specific LEDs. I think that's a huge jump for me to make.
Well, and this is one of those things that, to their credit, they made it very simple in that the bulbs look and act just like other bulbs. They just have this extra hidden bonus thing that they can do. But convincing retailers to do that, I mean, ideally what you want to do is convince a huge nationwide retailer like Home Depot to do it.
But yeah, I see. I just don't see that happening.
No, and there's so many other technologies that can do these kinds of things, anything from NFC and Bluetooth. There's so many competing indoor navigation things going on. I'm not optimistic.
Yeah, I'm not either. And there are, as you said, there are many other applications out there. The ones that come to my mind are aisle 411 and point inside. They're already there. They're up. They're going.
Right. And moreover, if they could connect this up with navigation for folks who are not sighted, all the better. Let's think about universal design, something that helps everybody.
Right.
And this... Yeah. At least it's not being portrayed as being in that space, and that's very disappointing. Okay, Groundswell is a company created in 2004, and the idea is to create a system of web-based integrated sensors that release real-time data to help researchers examine potential environmental and ecological hazards, including pollution and water distribution. The platform will be the first to allow users to track changes in four dimensions using a 3D model that plots data over time. Now, how did that one strike you?
Well, it struck me as being incredibly sophisticated and potentially very useful. My concern was that for it to be truly useful, is the information going to be presented in units of measure that we're all going to be familiar with, or are we going to learn how to interpret these 3D models and knowing intrinsically what the data feeds are into that model? It sounded great, but complex, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to relate that to the average person.
Right. Well, and I don't think this is for the average person.
Right, right.
This is for the researchers who are looking at these particular phenomena. Things that are changing out in the world. My sense is this is basically an implementation of what the Open Geospatial Consortium has called the sensor web.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea there being you go out on the web and find out where all the sensors are that are sensing the things that you're interested in, and you can tap into them, And they follow standards so that you can get the data and immediately make it useful to yourself.
Right.
So to me, this is an implementation of a vision that's been around for some time. And the potential is quite high. So
yeah, my question
is, I want this one to succeed more than almost any other one.
Yeah, I have to admit, my big question is, where are you going to find all the sensor data? You know, how much of the sensor-related information is already put out there or on the web for public consumption?
Right, and can you convince those folks to, in a sense, plug into this network?
Right.
Right. So again, it comes to standards and convincing people to follow your lead. That's sort of the same idea with the bulb technology. You've got to convince people that this is the way to go.
Right, exactly.
Zik Energy Points. And this one is just really interesting, and they just got a $3 million initial funding round. The goal is to help companies measure their sustainability efforts by sophisticated algorithms and a new universal energy usage metric, the EPG. Now, stay with me here. The acronym stands for energy per gallon and is based on the amount of energy contained in 1 gallon of gasoline. With its Energy Points platform, which will be sold under a software-as-a-service model, Energy Points will then take geospatial data for the region a company has its operations in and apply that to the EPG constant to give each company an accurate baseline of the energy costs of any activity at the company for that specific location. So, an hour of running 100 light bulbs in one office in Cambridge, for example, might be one EPG, but in Alexandria, Virginia, it might be 1.2 EPG, and in Seattle, it might be 0.8 EPG. Now, did you follow that?
Well, while complicated, I did follow it. And what I like is that this application is tending to put things in understandable terms. And I think people will react to that such that if I knew I was consuming, for example, 10 gallons of gas in my office per day, I might very well change my habits. So people don't change their habits unless they can perceive the impact and it's understandable in dollars and cents terms. And I think this has the potential to do that.
Right. But I think as the way it's being introduced, this is really geared toward companies.
Agreed. But the company's got to bring it down to the employee level. And if you told an employee, hey, we got to change a few things. We know that we're consuming energy in this way. Let's alter our behavior.
That's interesting because I understood it very differently. I understood it that the management of the company would have a look across all of their offices across the United States, and they'd say, hey, you know, we run this big overnight batch process on our computers, and we do it in Berkeley, California, overnight. And guess what? The cost of energy there is much higher than it is in our office in North Dakota. So maybe we should run it in North Dakota.
I see. Yeah, I hear you. I think that's cool. Yeah.
And it goes a little bit further because, again, they're trying to hone in on sustainability efforts. So using this kind of a measure, you could figure out where you could get the most return on investment for your sustainability efforts. Again, if you're going to put in wind power, are you going to get more return on your investment if you do it in Berkeley, California or in North Dakota?
Right. No, I think this is good. I like this approach. I think it can work both ways. I think it could work at both the high level corporate level, as you suggest, by taking into account location and the cost per location. I also has the potential to work on a per employee basis or per office basis as well.
Right. And the other challenge this company's going to have, of course, is they can certainly run the numbers to get the cost of energy, say now. But what's the cost of energy going to be in Berkeley in 6 months and in North Dakota in 6 months? That's what can get much more complicated, especially if you're going to build plants, in the future.
Yeah, that takes more of an econometric model.
But these guys seem to have no issues with technology and all that sort of stuff.
That's true enough, yeah.
So this is one to keep an eye on, I think.
It's very cool.
Very cool, very geographic, very timely, very save money, save the earth, green. It's got all those things going for it. Okay, the last innovative geospatial solution we want to look at is called City Maps. And that sounds like one of those generic, shouldn't that already exist? Well, it does, actually. It's already available in New York City, and it's launching soon in San Francisco. It shows all the storefronts, restaurants, coffee shops, ATMs, shoe stores, and dry cleaners block by block. So it's really got two things going for it. It makes these very simple, intuitive, almost logo-focused maps of cities, of the retailers. And it overlays on that all the social media stuff for those places. So reviews, restaurant reviews, plus if Starbucks is giving away free coffee and they're tweeting it, that would show up in this app. So is anything innovative about this?
A couple different things. Innovative from the standpoint of amassing all of these different types of information sources, no.
That's a Swiss Army knife again.
Right. Presentation-wise, I think it has a lot of potential, in particular because the demonstration of the kind of the magnifying glass or the looking glass, taking into the fact that you're not looking at just buildings, but now you're looking at logos, I think is visually appealing. I would think that the brands would love this. I mean, advertisers spend millions of dollars branding their logos. From that point of view, I think it's great. I think it has a great potential because when you look at a building, in particular in a high-dense urban environment, as one of their examples shows, you don't often know what's going on inside the building. It may get you to the building, but it may not get you to the right place inside the building or know what is being featured, like indoor malls, for example. I like that. I also had the thought that this would be a great app to transform into an augmented reality app. Because from a ground level, I see much more potential than from a map view level.
I think what we're both being taken by is the simplicity of the logos as map symbols, basically.
Right.
And that just makes it so much easier. And from a pure navigation standpoint, if you're looking for the dry cleaners that's next to the Starbucks, it's really easy to look for the Starbucks because you know exactly what it looks like.
Right.
Because they all look the same.
Yeah, from the standpoint of having a reference point, if you always know where that Starbucks logo is, and then you all of a sudden say, there's my favorite mom and pop deli nearby. I think that would be visually represented and nice to have.
Right. And it is unique in the sense that to some degree, all of the online maps look about the same. I mean, yeah, there's some variation between what Google Maps looks like and what Bing Maps looks like and what OpenStreetMap looks like. But essentially, they all look the same. These maps don't look like that at all.
Right.
And I think that is innovative and exciting and should get the cartographers excited about what the potential of city maps. So we'll keep an eye out to see if any of these innovations really take off. But this is sort of a broad swath view of what at least the media is considering to be innovation in geospatial right now. That's all the time we have before we go. Please remember that this podcast is brought to you by Intergraph, providers of GeoMedia and Urdas Imagine. GeoMedia and Urdas Imagine feature the widest range of native data format compatibility on the market and a solid commitment to open standards from the OGC and ISO, providing seamless integration with current and future business systems and keeping you free from proprietary lock-in. To learn more, visit www.intergraph.com/geospatial.
And from us here at Directions Magazine, I'd like to remind you that the registration for the 2012 Location Intelligence and Oracle Spatial Users Conference is now open. You can find out more information at locationintelligence.net. And if any of you are going to be attending the ESRI FedUC conference this week, hope to see you there.
If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can email us at editors@directionsmag.com or send us a tweet @directionsmag. Or you can leave a comment at directionsmag.com where this podcast is hosted. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.